bed. It was hard to make out the figure lying there, but it had that certain stillness that suggests the kind of sleep from which there is unlikely to be any kind of awakening.
"You see," he said, "he's been killed already."
A dozen soldiers were staring at Rincewind in amazement. Behind him he heard the creaking of the floor and then some whooshing sounds followed by a noise like wet leather being hit against a rock. Rincewind looked at the nearest soldier. The man was holding a sword. One drop of blood coursed down the blade and, with a brief pause for dramatic effect, fell on the floor. Rincewind looked up and raised his hat.
"I do beg your pardon," he said brightly. "Isn't this room 3B?
And ran for it. The floor screamed under him, and behind him someone screamed Rincewind's nickname, which was, "Don't let him get away." "Let me get away," Rincewind prayed. "Oh, please, let me get away." He slipped as he turned the corner, skidded through a paper wall, and landed in an ornamental fish pond. But Rincewind, in full flight, had cat-like, even messianic, abilities. The water barely rippled under his feet as he bounced off the surface and headed away. Another wall erupted, and he was in what was possibly the same corridor. Behind him, someone landed heavily on a valuable koi. Rincewind shot forward again. From. That was the most important factor in any mindless escape. You were always running from. Two could look after itself. He cleared a long flight of shallow stone steps, rolled upright at the bottom, and set off at random along another corridor. His legs had sorted themselves out now. First, the mad, wild dash to get you out of immediate danger, and then the good, solid strides to put as much distance as possible between you and it. That was the trick. History told of a runner who'd run 40 miles after a battle to report its successful outcome to those at home. He was traditionally regarded as the greatest runner of all time. But if he'd been reporting news of an impending battle, he'd have been overtaken by Rincewind. And yet, someone was gaining. A knife poked through the wall of the throne room and cut a hole large enough to afford space for an upright man or one wheelchair. There was muttering from the horde.
"Bruce the Hoon never went in the back way."
"Shut up."
"Never went for back gates, Bruce the Hoon."
"Shut up."
"When Bruce the Hoon attacked Al Carly, he did it right at the main guard tower with 1,000 screaming men on very small horses."
"Yeah. But last I saw of Bruce the Hoon, his head was on a spike."
"All right, I'll grant you that, but at least it was over the main gate. I mean, at least he got in."
"His head did."
"Oh, my."
Mr. Savaloy was gratified. The room they'd stepped into was enough to silence the horde, if only briefly. It was large, of course, but that hadn't been its only purpose. One Sun Mirror, as he welded the tribes and countries and little island nations together, had wanted a room built which said to chieftains and ambassadors, "This is the biggest space you've ever been in. It is more splendid than anything you could ever imagine, and we've got a lot more rooms like this." He had wanted it to be impressive. He had very clearly wanted it to intimidate mere barbarians, so much that they'd give in there and then. "Let there be huge statues," he'd said, "and vast decorative hangings. Let there be pillars and carvings. Let the visitor be silenced by the sheer magnificence. Let it say to him, 'This is civilization, and you can join it or die. Now drop to your knees, or be shortened some other way.'"
The horde gave it the benefit of their inspection. Finally, Truckle said,
"It's all right, I suppose, but not a patch on our chieftain's longhouse back in Scund. It hasn't even got a fire in the middle of the floor, look."
"It's gaudy, to my mind." "What?" "Typically foreign."
"I'd do away with most of this and get some decent straw on the floor, few shields round the walls."
"What? Mind you, get in a few hundred tables and you could have a hell of a carouse in here."
Cohen walked across the huge expanse towards the throne, which was under a vast ornamental canopy.
"It's got an umbrella over it, look."
"Probably the roof leaks, you can't trust tiles. A good reed thatch'll give you 40 years bone dry."
The throne was lacquered wood, but with many precious gems set in it. Cohen sat down.
"Is this it?" he said. "We've done it, Teach."
"Yes, of course, now you have to get away with it," said Mr. Savaloy.
"I'm sorry," said Six Beneficent Winds. "What have you done?"
"You know that thing we were here to steal?" said the teacher.
"Yes,"